particular region of English literature than in any other, the answer is no doubt that Elizabethan prose, for all its beauty and bounty, was a very imperfect medium. It was almost incapable of fulfilling one of the offices of prose, which is to make people talk simply and naturally about ordinary things. In an age of utilitarian prose like our own, we know exactly how people spend the hours between breakfast and bed, how they behave when they are neither one thing nor the other, neither angry nor loving, neither happy nor miserable. Poetry ignores these slighter shades. The social student can pick up hardly any facts about daily life from Shakespeare's plays. And if prose refuses to enlighten us, then one avenue of approach to the men and women of another age is blocked. Elizabethan prose, still scarcely separated off from the body of its poetry, could speak magnificently, of course, about the great themes: how life is short and death certain, how spring is lovely and winter horrid. Perhaps, indeed, the lavish and towering periods that it raises above these simple platitudes are due to the fact that it has not cheapened itself upon trifles. But the price it pays for this soaring splendour is to be found in its awkwardness when it comes to earth. When Lady Sidney, for example, finding herself cold at nights, has to solicit the Lord Chamberlain for a better bedroom at court. Then any housemaid of her own age could put her case more simply and with greater force. Thus, if we go to the Elizabethan prose writers to solidify the splendid world of Elizabethan poetry, as we should go now to our biographers, novelists and journalists to solidify the world of Pope, of Tennyson, of Conrad, we are perpetually baffled and driven from our quest. What, we ask, was the life of an ordinary man or woman in the time of Shakespeare? Even the familiar letters of the time give us little help. Sir Henry Wotton is pompous and ornate, and keeps us stiffly at arm's length. Their histories resound with drums and trumpets. Their broadsheets reverberate with meditations upon death and reflections upon the immortality of the soul. Our best chance of finding them off their guard, and so becoming at ease with them, is to seek one of those unambitious men who haunt the outskirts of famous gatherings, listening, observing, sometimes taking a note in a book. But they are difficult to find. Gabriel Harvey, perhaps, the friend of Spenser and of Sidney, might have fulfilled that function. Unfortunately, the values of the time persuaded him that to write about rhetoric, to write about Thomas Smith, to write about Queen Elizabeth in Latin was better worth doing than to record the table talk of Spenser and Sir Philip Sidney. But he possessed, to some extent, the modern instinct for preserving trifles, for keeping copies of letters, and for making notes of ideas that struck him in the margins of books. If we rummage among these fragments, we shall, at any rate, leave the high road and perhaps hear some roar of laughter from a tavern door where poets are drinking, or meet humble people going about their milking and their lovemaking, without a thought that this is the great Elizabethan age, or that Shakespeare is at this moment strolling down the Strand, and might tell one, if one plucked him by the sleeve, to whom he wrote the sonnets, and what he meant by Hamlet. The first person whom we meet is indeed a milkmaid, Gabriel Harvey's sister, Mercy. In the winter of 1574, she was milking in the fields near Saffron Walden, accompanied by an old woman, when a man approached her and offered her cakes and Malmsey wine. When they had eaten and drunk in a wood, and the old woman had wandered off to pick up sticks, the man proceeded to explain his business. He came from Lord Surrey, a youth of about Mercy's own age, 17 or 18, that is, and a married man. He had been bowling one day and had seen the milkmaid. Her hat had blown off, and she had somewhat changed her colour. In short, Lord Surrey had fallen passionately in love with her, and sent her by the same man gloves, a silk girdle, and an enamel posy ring which he had torn from his own hat, though his aunt, Lady W., had given it him for a very different purpose. Mercy at first stood her ground. She was a poor milkmaid, and he was a noble gentleman.